We're going to go ahead and get started. We have a couple of items on our agenda for this Yes, Mr. Maris, would you introduce our guest?
Lindsay Hansen from Dover Yoda Schools, who is shadowing me today. So we've had an eventful day today, starting out at 8 this morning. I said she didn't have to stay for the council meeting tonight, but she is here for now. So welcome, Lindsay.
Welcome.
Right. Welcome. Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you for attending. Okay, moving on with our agenda. First up, we have the DMC Transportation Plan update. And I think we'll have multiple presenters. Mr. Reimer, you want to lead off?
Well, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone that's here in attendance. I want to start by thanking a few people. Obviously, our Public Works Director, Richard Freeze, for his efforts and leadership in this. Today is an important day as we start to bring forward the public presentations of our integrated transportation studies and talking to you, as well as later this week, the DMCC board, about where we're at today. Today, we are not looking for formal decisions or final actions. That's really a chance to check in, to make sure that we're on the right path, to gather any input that you may have or additional work that you'd like to see done. And then ultimately, the goal is to try to bring forward the final documents in June. And so first, it's Richard. I also want to thank our team from SRF that's here, our representatives, and put in countless hours and revisions to this document, as we've done today, as well as our teammates from the EDA, DMC, Patrick, and Lisa. We're going to start by having Lisa walk through some introductory information, and I'll get into some more details. We're going to try to keep it high level in our presentation, and then ultimately have time for comments, questions, and answers from the council. At that time, we'll have some subject matter experts probably engage a little more if you have real specific questions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. I also want to ditto Steve's comments on thanks, because everybody around this table knows that transportation planning has many moving parts and many audiences, and so this group has done a really nice job of trying to dig in and really do justice to this plan. We grounded it, of course, in the DMC mission and vision, so every time we bring a DMC project forward, we make sure that it serves up to the mission and the vision, and in this case, positioning Rochester as that world's premier destination. And in terms of the vision, there's nothing that that talks about experience better than transportation. And so it's all about the experience of all of the different stakeholders. So DMC priorities, I think I'm speaking to all of you, speaking amongst friends, and you know our priorities are three. We have heart of the city, Discovery Square, and today we're going to be focusing on the transportation. We had four studies in the field. The consultants and Richard and team have been working very hard on four of these studies, and that's what we're going to be talking about. So the purpose of the studies, we did the work kicked off in early 2016, and then the consultants engaged about August of 2016. So we've been working quite a while on this. And the purpose of the studies right out of the chute was to refine the vision of the DMC transportation plan. So if you recall the DMC vision and concept planning at the beginning, this would actually be the next level of that. It would be validating some of the work that was in the initial DMC plan. It would also be revising, looking at data again, gathering new data. The team has done a nice job of that. And then doing a rigorous study of all the alternatives on all fronts, which they've done, and you'll hear more about that. And we wanted to answer these basic questions. We've got a certain amount of space. What's going to fit best in that? Also, in terms of being stewards of public dollars, what is the best but most cost-effective use of these public dollars in terms of transportation? And then we want to make sure that we brought the public along with us. So there's been quite a few public engagement opportunities already to date, and there will be more. And like Steve said, we aren't asking for approval today. Rather, this is an update and talk about the next steps for the plan. And then we talk about preparing for design, procurement, access to state and federal funds. Basically, we need to start setting the table now over these next first few years. And we all know that if we're going to go after state dollars and fed dollars, that takes some time to get in the queue and to get ready and to tee things up. So we'll be doing that.
Let me ask, I mean, with the point that we're not making formal decisions today, but we're kind of checking in, what do you see that decision-making date? When do you see that actually happening? We have to firm up some of these.
Yeah, that's a good question. Michael. Well, today we're going to talk about sort of some nods about do you agree with the concepts mm-hmm. in the movement forward. So if you want to consider that a decision, it's really more of affirmation yep. for direction. Mm-hmm. And then the decisions I think will be starting at the next, probably right around the next DMC board meeting, which okay. is in June.
Okay.
So we're moving along.
And I'm always supportive of moving forward.
I know you are. So scope. When we talk about scope, we've been talking about the transportation efforts, and it's very clear that we want to make sure that DMC is a hard line boundary. We all know that. So this plan has a scope in amongst itself of this hard boundary, but it also connects with these other plans and opportunities ahead of us. Rochester's doing a lot of planning in terms of the comp plan, some work that Rochester City is doing. Olmsted County does a lot of planning in terms of transportation. The region does planning in terms of transportation, as well as the state. And we want to, when we start to walk through the findings here, we want to make sure that everybody understands we're talking about the DMC part of this plan. But we also know that it really needs to connect to all of these other initiatives that are going on in all of these levels. And that's really critical and important. So here's where we are. Sometimes people feel like when we start talking about something, we should jump to the time to construct it. And when it comes to transportation, I think everybody knows there's so many layers of this. So we did the needs and concept development plan and the DMC development plan, and this was the full assessment of all of the alternatives and recommendations. So we're here today, and then as you can see, these are the next steps that we'll be going through as we move this forward. Remember, a DMC is a 20-year initiative, and we will be focusing on the first few years. What can we do today, and what will we be planning for in the future? So we're going to start to talk about the key findings, and I'm going to turn it back to Steve to start walking through some of those findings from the great work that the team has done, and we'll be pausing every now and then to sort of talk about some nods to move forward.
Thanks, Lisa. Any questions, comments, thoughts at this point before we get into some of the key findings? Okay. So as Lisa said, I'm going to walk through each of these areas, and at any point, if you want to stop me, please do so. We're going to have some check-in questions, and at that point I'll turn over to the Council President Staver just to facilitate that conversation and then move on to the next. So the first one is there is a need. Obviously, if we're going to have a major planning effort like this, we have to first determine, is there a need to do this? If so, what is it and why? And so we have a few different areas here to show you that we concluded that there truly is one. First is in the employment areas. You can see on the chart on the left, this is for the DMC district alone. And you can see from where we're at today, about 35,000 moving up to 62,400 employment just within the district. So we're going to have significant growth here in the next 25 years or so just within the DMC district. That then equates to the vehicle trips in and out of the district. If you look at the bar on the left, in 2010, we had about 165,000 trips a day. If nothing changes and we continue with that employment growth, we would move up to 268,000 vehicle trips per day. Now, that dotted line, you can see where it says 180, that is taken in consideration the mode shift, and what we're really striving for is to obviously see some increase in the vehicle trips per day, but limiting it to another 15,000 only compared to what could happen if we don't plan accordingly. A couple other pieces to orientate you to it. On the left-hand side, we see most of the blue squares. That's 52. And so this is really talking about the capacity that we have to get into the city. Many of you that travel this coming into the city understand that in those key areas, there's limited capacity. There's limited capacity throughout the downtown in terms of accessing it, and then ultimately when you get here. We understand part of this was not expanding roadways, adding additional. We have a fixed area, we have a fixed system, and just understanding that in order to address this, we have to, one, understand this first, and then two, how do you build a plan around that? And then the second part, just to put this into perspective, we believe, as well as I believe the council, the DMCC board, the EDA, and others, that there are higher land use priorities for our downtown that can generate economic development and redevelopment. We need approximately 16,500 additional parking spaces. To put that into context, that would be 7 blocks of 9-story ramps in our downtown. And so if we're going to have that type of employment growth, if we're going to have that growth in the trips down into the district, we need to address this in a different way.
Is that, sorry, is that with the mode shift, or is that without the mode shift?
That's
I see a head. Okay, I see a head nodding behind you. That's with the mode shift. Okay.
Any more questions right now?
No, that's all. Thank you.
So I'll turn over to Council President Stavers to walk through these questions, and then we'll go on to the next item.
So you see the questions that are presented, and obviously a lot of information has been presented before today. How do those three questions, are we in agreement with those statements, or do you have a different viewpoint? Mr. Bojic.
Strongly support all three.
Okay. Anyone else have any comment? I mean, they seem straightforward. I don't think, honestly, that you would argue with any of those statements based on everything we know and the anticipated growth in our community on all fronts. Anyone disagree or have contrary comments?
Thank you. So we agree there is a need. So the next one is we believe that the best solution, as it says up there, is an integrated solution that really is multifaceted, takes into account all these different areas. And you'll notice on here, policies and programs are on there as well. This is not just about infrastructure and looking at mode shift in terms of bikes and pedestrians and using transit and how we have more than one individual in a car. We're really focusing on the policies and programs as well. And that's an important part as we go through these next few slides, that this is not just about the infrastructure that we're building.
We have questions.
I want to go back to the when we talked about these three points. I believe, you know, obviously we said we all agree, but one of the things that I looked at in the chart previous to that was the 2015 to 2040 growth of people within the downtown district. It's 35,000 to 62,400. Is there a chance we can have a chart on that and show kind of the projection of growth and how much we expect to see each year and see how we're doing? Because we already have 3 years that we already could start to kind of trend, and that allows us to be able to see, are those numbers actually factual, or are they projections that maybe aren't hitting, and if so, then we might, you know, have some flexibility in this. So
yeah, and we actually started doing that exact tracking to start to monitor what kind of job growth we're seeing over the next, you know, for the last 3 years anyway. We are on track at about 1,500 jobs per year.
So we've added 1,500 the first 3 years?
Yeah.
Okay, 1,500 per year.
But we can keep track. We keep tracking that.
Yeah, I think that'd be a nice chart for us to see in the as we move into the future, that we're on our projections and that's what's happening.
Absolutely.
So, okay,
yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gilbeck?
Lisa, is that just at Mayo, or is that in the whole zone?
The city of Rochester.
So you're tracking the entire,
yeah,
every business within the zone.
Yeah, we used, I'm trying to think what data we used. I think it's the Rochester City. I think it's the city.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Any other questions?
All right, go ahead.
Let me get us back to where we were here.
Okay, so what are we trying to accomplish? Getting back to those numbers of the individuals, that would be the number of employees, and looking at the transportation needs. On the left is today. So you can see about 71% of people coming in are in single occupancy vehicles, SOVs. A smaller, much more smaller, the 29% make up the other three categories. What we're trying to achieve through the mode shift is moving that to 43% would be by single occupancy vehicles. And you can see just by numbers, a very slight increase from 25,000 to 26,800. And then really moving towards a target where our transit, our pedestrian, bicyclists, and our carpooling in other ways are really meeting the needs of the mode shift. It's important to understand as we look at this and we talk about biking and walking to work, we also, as you know, in our development, are developing more housing downtown. So this is not just meaning that people from throughout different parts of the community are going to be biking in, which we hopefully will, but it also means we're going to have more people living and working in the downtown area, thus the need for the pedestrian and bikeways, as we'll get into here in a second. So first, talking about the policy side of this, and it's not just about the infrastructure, but it's really looking at those three areas: policies, programs, and incentives. One of the key pieces of this is what's called the Transportation Management Association, the TMA. That's right in the middle. We are in the process of having that start here in the spring. As you also know, at tonight's council meeting, there's an item requesting that you improve the software, New Ride, to help us manage this. It'll be something that will really give us a chance to track it, to track how effective we are,
to give us some metrics and if we're being successful. Because everything we're talking about assumes that we're going to be very successful in this area. It's not just building infrastructure. In fact, the goal would be that we don't have to invest as much in infrastructure if we are as successful in this area. Some examples of this in these different areas, as you can see, our wayfinding, having free transit passes as incentives. A key thing for bicyclists is having easy access to shower facilities. There's different businesses that may invest in things like that. It's working with the employers downtown, it's working with those that are the employees downtown, and making sure that we can find ways to incent people. Sometimes it's going to be difficult policy decisions that have to be made by employers, city being one of them, and really making sure that we do things that are in line with that. Because if we're not as successful here, it is going to drive more towards the need for infrastructure. So in infrastructure, starting with the picture on the left, as you know, there's been studies and analysis of the different forms that we could use. I'm talking about more of a rail system. What we are recommending is a bus rapid transit, which, as we explained, has rubber tires at grade. Driving on the same roads, if you will, as the cars are. But it's really putting together a system that's thoroughly thought through, well-designed and coordinated to make sure that we can move the individuals through the system as efficiently as possible, as conveniently as possible, make sure it's successful. And once again, make sure that the overall goals can be met. As many of you know, in the transportation and transit, if it's not convenient, if it's not accessible, those are some of the barriers to it. And so we'll make sure that this project, as we move forward, has been planned to accommodate those. Another important part of this is you can see the mixed-use park and ride facilities. One thing that's important for the council, it's going to be important for the DMCC board, it's going to be important for us as well as the community to understand, we're not just talking about large parking lots on the outskirts of the city. We're really talking about these mixed-use areas that make life a little more convenient. So picture parking downtown today. You'll need to ultimately start parking at a different spot. Just saying, trust us, it's going to be a good experience for you, may not be enough, but we like to make it a better experience. For those of us that were just out at the National League of Cities and we're riding the metro, there's some key spots like Reston that just opened up one. They're really good examples of what they're doing with bringing services to those sites. There's ones that have daycare there. They have coffee shops. They have places to gather. And so it's really a way of, once again, making it a little more convenient, making it a vibrant spot for it, making it a spot to have economic development above and beyond just the parking. So it's something to really envision as we're moving forward, that we're talking much more than just parking structures. In the infrastructure, both of these demonstrate, we're looking at all the different modes of transportation, as you can see, from the vehicles, to individuals walking and jogging, to those on bikes. This is also part of the key part of the Destination Medical Center. Lisa talked about the vision and purpose. Being the premier city for health and wellness is a key part of this. Our infrastructure plays into that. I know there's a few people we've talked about with the comp plan. We've heard it at the EDA board for some of the doctors at Mayo that really feel this is an important part of this, not only as our transportation part, but as a health and wellness part of what the DMC is all about, what it means for our community, and what it can mean for others that are looking to simulate what we're doing here. So this point on the policies and infrastructure, just once again going back, we believe it's a mix. We're reliant on both. We're hoping that the side of policies and programs and incentives can be even more successful. But I think we're talking about is built on the combination of the two. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Council President Staver.
So once again, looking for a reaction to these statements, whether they're in general agreement. I had a couple of comments. I do definitely believe in item one. Infrastructure alone won't cause the mode shift. It'll be interesting to see what incentives we have to place to encourage participation. If I think of mass transit, for example, and I know we've done some polling, but it'll be important to understand from our community what would incent them to use mass transit. For example, I think proximity to drop-off pick-up points, the frequency of the network travel, and then cost. So if I've got to walk, you know, a great distance to get on, and then they only run every half hour, I'm going to be less incented, I think. So I'm just saying that I agree with statement one, that infrastructure alone won't cause a mode shift. And then item four, I agree with that statement, but I'm also, my question is, I think we have some practical considerations. We have a finite amount of right-of-way, so if we say we're going to increase bike and pedestrian networks without reducing traffic lanes, what gives? Do we lose street parking? Are we narrowing sidewalks? Are we doing whatever? And I don't know if we have answers for that. I'm just saying that I look at that with a little bit skepticism, but maybe that's too strong of a word, but I just want to be practical. Other comments, questions, Mr. Wojcik?
Well, I want to first of all point to number five and just say how important it is, because this is one of those long lead time things, and we have to be solid that this is the way to go. And my personal dreams aside, this is clearly the right decision for the community. The only way that we can do this in anything that remotely approaches fiscal responsibility is at-grade, rubber-tired bus rapid transit. It's a long lead time to get that done, and if we're not sold on that, if we're going to keep going back and revisiting this one, we're doing a tremendous disservice to the people trying to do the long-term planning. So I definitely agree with number five. Agree with President Staver's comments on number one. I always like to go back to the statistic that 98% of people support transit for other people and not necessarily themselves. And but it's truly doing this in a way where it's a good choice to use. And I would say the number one incentive, though, and why Mayo Clinic has to put up on this too, is the worst thing you can do to promote transit use is give away free parking. And that has been a real culture shift for the Mayo Clinic. And frankly, if they're not our partners in the TMA, the whole system falls down. So in this particular case, I think Mayo needs to come to the table and put on their grown-up clothing and figure out how we're going to make sure we have a holistic approach to this. And I know that there's a segment of employees at the Mayo Clinic who that is like hearing fingers on a chalkboard. The one that the only one on here that I have some concern of, probably for different reasons, is, and I appreciate the additional information, but on number four, increase bike and pedestrian network without reducing traffic lanes. I understand conceptually what this is, and I support the goal behind it. We're talking about 25,000 single vehicle trips downtown today, 27,000, call it, in 2040, and we should not reduce the effectiveness of the system overall for those. But when you specifically say without reducing traffic lanes, that's not actually what's happening in a number of places, and we're going to be looking at one of them tonight, Second Avenue Southwest. We are possibly reducing traffic lanes on there. And there are a number of other places where it may make sense to reduce traffic lanes. Now, the clarification, the points that we received by email today, this recommendation calls for designated bicycle lanes on certain streets as part of increasing safe access for bicyclists to and within the DMC district. In some cases, the recommendation call for replacing parking lanes with dedicated bike lanes. In other cases, the right-of-way is being expanded or reapportioned to add bike lanes or the city loop. Vehicle trips will continue to grow, so reducing the vehicle travel lanes is not part of this recommendation. But the key one, and the part that I'm willing to support this on, the last one, stakeholder input will be considered, and that any final street design approved by the City Council may vary from these recommendations on a case-by-case basis. And I would be opposed to the City Council switching gears on things that require a long lead time, like number five here. But as long as we have the flexibility to take these other ones on a case-by-case basis, because in brief conversation, we came up with about six streets that could potentially have vehicle lanes reduced on them and not negatively affect transit in any way. As long as we have that flexibility and we understand that this is going to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, I respect number four, but I just wanted to make sure that clarification was in there as well.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, so I think four and five are really important. Number four, I mean, I like to see this stated explicitly. We've been kind of all over the place on this. I think the DMC design guidelines certainly don't reflect number four. So I think this is definitely a positive step, and I think it's an important one. Number five, I think, is spot on. You know, I think early on there was some talk of some more exotic transportation techniques, but for Rochester, probably not. I think the rubber tire to upgrade is key, and that certainly would allow us to segue in the future to autonomous vehicles or whatever the next greatest technology is. So I think this is spot on.
Mr. Bilbeck?
I would agree with all but number four, because I think four needs to be reworked because we are doing some reduction of lanes. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be talked about. We're not going to reduce the amount of traffic by what the traffic engineers claim should or could run on those roads. Lanes are different than what we're allowing for traffic. So I think it should be talking about how much traffic generation can go through there, not necessarily lanes, because otherwise we're going to get caught in the same kind of snafu we're in now, where the lane issue versus the amount of vehicle travel mm-hmm. are two different things, but we're fighting over a larger amount of lane travel or traveling of vehicles versus the amount of lanes. Number five is spot on, and I like it for the flexibility. The fact is, as the city changes and grows, we're projecting, but that's no guarantee that's the way it's going to go. Having the rubber tire bus rapid transit is a way to do it and have the flexibility, so I like that.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, the one, as we kind of reviewed prior to the meeting, some of the bigger material in here, the story that keeps cropping up in my mind is the description of one out-of-town resident that was kind of frustrated about the cross-street exploring transit options was the idea that he gets in his vehicle in Austin, drives downtown, parks, gets out at his workplace, goes to work, gets back in that car, and drives out of town. Mm-hmm. And I think the key part of number one about the infrastructure not making the mode shift is the infrastructure that we're going to build is going to be competing with one of the simplest transit options possible, which is you get in your car, you get directly to the doorstep of where you work, and you reverse that on the way home. And the reality, again, I think the slides that led up to this are so important, is that's not a sustainable model for us to continue building workforce and building the economic capacity of our community. So I think one is very important. I think the story is a little bit more robust than even the slides have led on so far. I think we've got a little bit of discussion points we need to kind of get out to make it clear to people. This isn't, we're not naive. Like, we understand that today's model for a lot of people is working extremely well. This is about building a community for a decade from now, one that's going to be sustainable. So again, you know, I'm supportive of these. I actually think Councilmember Bilbeck just brought up one of the key challenges that this council faces, is that there's a built-in equivalence between lanes and capacity. And there is certainly an engineering model that says a certain amount of capacity is available on a certain number of lanes. But we can maintain capacity sometimes by re-swizzling the lane structure and the layout of the roadway. And I don't think setting a hard line is as important as saying we're going to continue to maintain that existing capacity for vehicle traffic, instead of saying we're going to keep the lanes. The lanes is somewhat of a, it's something that we're, I think people are pining for because it looks like capacity, but if we can preserve the capacity and reallot some of that right away, I still think that can be a win for everyone. Making other modes safer and more convenient, it can also be a win for vehicle travel. So I think that there's, in my mind, some room to get everyone a win on number four. So I would just not want to see kind of like a hard rule that doesn't let us, make the right decision for the right situation.
Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I think every priority knows this, but I like number four word for word exactly the way it is. And there's always going to be exceptions, and we recognize that. But I think as a planning principle or a planning guideline, I think this sets the tone. To think, specifically we're talking about typically repurposing traffic lanes as bike lanes. The idea that we're going to move the same capacity of people on bicycles, especially in the winter in Rochester, Minnesota, isn't based in reality. So I think number four, as it's written word for word, is a good place to start. And then we recognize there's going to be exceptions. We deal with that all the time. I think we're smart enough to see that.
Mr. Wojcik?
Well, as long as you accept that there are exceptions, we're not taking it word for word. So, but what I would say is, perfect example, in front of the library, 5,000 vehicle trips per day, 5 lanes. You do not need 5 lanes in front of the library. It's an absolute waste of urban space and maintenance cost. So, you know, as long as planners have the flexibility to bring these to us on a case-by-case basis, we can argue about the wording another time, but I think that the I think that we're not at a decision point today, and I think the staff's hearing pretty good feedback on this one.
I get the sentiment from the group. There is some tricky language. We'll go back and think about that. Thank you.
Mr. Ruskin.
I guess, you know, number 5 is probably the best option, but I'm not all in on it yet because I had some questions on it before. When you talk about rapid transit, it's how rapid. You know, I think, and I asked some questions when we met on this before, stops at all lights, it stops for pedestrians, it stops for at crosswalks. When I asked about emergency vehicles, that, you know, somebody said that goes in the same lane. All I'm really visualizing here is Second Street, because that's kind of what I've been shown, mm-hmm. is from 15th Avenue down to the downtown. And so if you think about that, and you're basically eliminating all the lanes except for one lane in each direction on each side, then you've got to have the pedestrians be able to get over there safely and wait safely, and then you have to be able to make sure that that process works. And I think the other part is the city bus. I asked about that. Somebody said the city bus is going to drive on that same lane. I'm not sure if that's what the answer is on it. I know Mail does a shuttle. I'm not sure. Is Mail going to quit doing their shuttle and use this? Obviously, probably makes sense. But then the safety of people. When you look at, you know, the light rail up in the cities, and I mean, there's a lot of deaths and injuries that have happened through that. So you want to make sure that safety is the key component here, along with all the other things that go with it. So I still have some questions on just the implementation of it and exactly how it works before I say that, you know, I'm completely behind the rapid transit. If you're taking the bus line out or you're keeping the bus line in and you're saving 2 minutes, how much are we really doing with it? So those are the questions I still have.
All right. Mr. Roger.
And I would point specifically to the staff on this one. You've got to answer the questions to get everything on board with number 5. I mean, you have got to address these issues. You know, anything that preventing any of us from being on board with number 5 is a huge disservice to the future of the community. So let's get those questions answered now so we can go forward with a strong unanimous consent on that one. Because that's the one that we need 10 years lead time or whatever to get done.
All right, let's move on.
Well, thanks. Those are exactly the type of questions and comments that we're looking for at this point. So Councilmember Rusk already started to talk about this when he asked his first question earlier on about are we tracking the number of employees. And that's exactly what this is meant to talk about is when we look at the infrastructure and a slide or two from now, we're going to talk about the estimated cost of the infrastructure. That is the full build-out plan. So in a scenario like this, it's responsible to plan for what would be needed if all these things occur. There's a couple things we have to do, though. We are not saying that we just build the plan or build the system regardless. And so there's some key areas, some key metrics that we're looking at. We're looking at the population, employment, as well as the visitors. You can see each of them growing. We've talked about that. But we're going to track that. We need to track it closely, and we need to track it often because, as Councilman Wojcik has said a few times, these infrastructure investments take some lead time to get into place. So we are going to have to look at some trends and some assumptions. But at the end of the day, we're going to be utilizing this to really decide where we go in the next phase and the next phase. As Lisa mentioned, right now we're focused on that first 5-year period. A lot of it's been planning. We'll start down the path with some of the things we're talking about, and primarily the programmatic areas and the policies and incentives. But we also need to be continually looking towards the planning of the infrastructure and those improvements. And so we will be watching this, as I said. This is something that we need to pay attention to, but we also need to make sure the council, the DMCC board, is aware of on an ongoing basis to know where each of these are heading, what our assumptions are for the future. Right now, this is what it's built on, and like I said, we will verify those numbers as we move forward. Any questions on this part or anything that I missed from the demand part?
Do we know what percentage of new jobs are male?
Yeah, out of the 30,000, about 14 or 15,000 are male, and the rest are other jobs.
And chances are those 14 or 15,000 will not get parking.
Those are pretty good chances.
Yeah.
The new jobs.
What's it, 12 years right now? 12 years to get a parking space?
What?
I think it's 12 years to get a parking space.
19. 19.
Now I'm glad I'm retired.
So the point is that
Yeah. Some of the what's needed is not necessarily because of Mayo's growth. It's could be the rest.
Mr. Russell.
Can I ask a question on that? I mean, I think that one of the challenges that we have here is workforce and attracting talent. And so are we going to say to the physicians, hey, we're just going to ration, but by the way, we're not going to be able to provide parking for you, or is that they're going to be kind of excluded from that, and then is it the anesthesiologists, and is it the RNs? I mean, is there a point when we start saying, look, if they need parking, we, you know, if that's going to help us to attract them, we're going to have to provide that. Is there any of that thought going in there? Because I would think that that's always been one of the unique things that Rush has been able to do, is kind of accommodate people and give them that quality of life that they don't get elsewhere. And now we're becoming kind of jumping in there with, as the same as everybody else. So has that been considered at all in the attraction of talent?
Yeah, they're having those exact discussions right now.
Okay.
You know, it's looking ahead. So Rochester or Mayo's also planning for the future, mm-hmm. and as they bring new staff on, they want to attract mm-hmm. the best and brightest. Right. And what are those incentives? And still participating in this transit plan, which is really important that Mayo is a critical player in this. So
yeah.
all those discussions are happening now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Which gets back, Lisa used the word we've talked about, it's about that experience. So it's going to be about the experience for employees, it's going to be about experience for visitors, and all those things have to be considered as we roll this up. So
once again, we're kind of a checkpoint, see if people are in agreement with these statements. I would say that I agree with the statements except for number two. I'm not sure those are the exclusive drivers or metrics. You know, we could have significant development. Say Wells Fargo has a significant development change. That could also be a driver. So I just wouldn't want to limit us to these being our only metrics. Mr. Woger.
Yeah, I appreciate that, too. I mean, we obviously sometimes have opportunities to strike when major development is going on, and I think staff's been pretty good about doing that over the years. I kind of chuckled when I first read that the transportation program should be phased, because I don't have $1.2 billion laying around, so I think that's a good idea.
Any other comments? Mr. Campion.
So I was just going to expand on this and say one of the items on tonight's meeting is the purchase of the software to drive the system. One of the things that I don't know if we want to talk about it now or if you want to save this for tonight, but maybe since our transit team is here, would be whether or not we build in metrics to call to purchasing that software. So again, that was a lot of times what we do in the software industries will say, like, yes, we'll sign up for the first year, but we're only staying on if you can do conversions of, say, 800 people, or you can prove out 800 people on your system. Year two, the metric is 1,500 people. In year three, it's going to be 2,000, and after that, we'll take those throttles off. I look at some of this and I say, how do we try it without potentially getting locked into a long-term system that, if it just doesn't have success, if people don't have the bite, whatever it is, it lacks features, whatever it could be. Mm-hmm. We have some options to pivot and some outs of those contracts. So that's one thing I've been thinking as we look at our phasing approaches to a lot of this is, how do we, you know, it's harder with bus rapid transit, you're buying the system, because if it's not rapid, then you don't get use. But on some of these other aspects of managing the transit options, how do we build in some of these checkpoints, both so we have some options, but also so we revisit and evaluate their success kind of in context.
Okay, anyone else? All right, moving on.
Okay, so this is about wrapping this up. So the next piece then is funding. One of the things that we found is that diverse funding is going to be required. So I already referenced the dollar amount, Councilmember Woldrick, I believe. So you can see in the middle, $1.2 billion project over many, many years. It's also important, once again, to remember this is on full build out if that's necessary over this multi year period, which is about 20 years ago. So this is not just going to be a DMC funded, it won't just be city funded, it won't just be county funded. There's a large portion of this would be private funded in terms of the private sector's investment. And the key part, as Lisa mentioned early on, is the federal and the state funding outside DMC funding. It's important that what we do today sets us up for that funding. And those two have a long lead time, working through the federal process to ensure that we're an eligible project for that funding. That's something that we will be, if anyone agrees, aggressively pursuing as part of this to ensure that a system like this can be built and can be built with the support of others. Those circles there Good point. Also to recognize, those do not equal the same percents. This is just for demonstration purposes. And so our goal would be some of the orange and private and gray, and those would be larger size circles. We only have so many DMC funds to bring to the table. And this transportation transit portion is going to be one that requires a significant amount of investment. And so we would ask that all you concur that it's important that we make our decisions today that set us up for those federal funding dollars.
Okay. I have Mr. Wojcik, then Mr. Campion.
So you're saying that you're asking us to support the idea that we would have less local money going in? I'm on board. But beside that, I would like, you know, any staff that's willing to comment on potential changes in the federal process for the Fast Starts or Tiger Grants or other programs, because it appears the federal government may be going away from the traditional model of funding some of these things, and I don't know if we can make the ends meet if that happens. I mean, any thoughts from staff on what some of the changes proposed at the federal level?
Well, they aren't working in our favor as currently proposed. I think that's the unfortunate part. But there's not a lot of detail in what the administration has proposed in Washington for the transit program. They're looking to promote a lot more public-private partnerships. They're looking for people to come to the table to match. I think that actually serves us well in this regard, because there is a proposed match in here. Yeah. We've got state match, and we've got potentially some local match. But the traditional programs of Fast Starts and New Starts, there really isn't a lot of clear direction on what the future of those might be at this time.
Yeah. Okay. I just had two things. Obviously, there's going to be some level of devolution of, to the local level to have higher levels of local investment. But with some of the thoughts on infrastructure funding, and you know, obviously, as you guys are hearing at the NLC, there is some potential opportunity for those projects that are ready to go, that are shovel ready, and that, as you advance design, I mean, that, those are the projects that do ultimately get funded, so you get to kind of be cognizant of that. There will be a federal role for this in the future. It's just, obviously, the potential is, you know, getting less each funding cycle.
Okay, Mr. Campion.
Well, that was my question as well, was the ecosystem at the federal level, because it does seem like it drives a lot of local decision-making. I guess one additional caveat would be to add further phases to this, if it's not something we're getting a fast start on, if there's not bootstrapping dollars available, we may have to scale the project to fit what is available, and just to work instead from what's the what is the best possible solution to what's the possible solution, may really have to be kind of the different footing you take.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else?
With diverse funding.
As part of this long-term thinking, I know there's a segment of the population that hear things like bus rapid transit, and they don't get excited about that. It can function effectively the same as light rail, but it just doesn't have that je ne sais quoi to it. And I do think that it's incumbent upon the leaders of this project, the transportation people, to really demonstrate to the public how powerful of a transportation option this is. Because it took me many, many years to come around to the idea that bus rapid transit was kind of a cool thing. And I've heard a rumor out there that there are some people that are maybe not as nerdy as me. And we've got to make sure that the public is on board with this as well, and they understand that this is actually a powerful, viable option, and not just a good enough for Rochester option.
I totally agree with that, because even as we've evolved in our thinking as a whole team, it's really helped for us to understand it really is light rail. It functions as light rail, only it has wheels. And the flexibility that we can garner from this will be pretty powerful, particularly we don't exactly know what tomorrow is going to bring with driverless cars, so I agree. It's really important for us to communicate what a great option this is, and do some benchmarking.
And it starts with Council Member Ruska's questions. You know, those are some of the common ones that we're going to get. But just, you know, putting on your marketing hat and showing the community why this works and why it's a good decision. if we just do this because it's the right decision, but we don't have public support, that's a great way to head into chaos and failure. So we do need to build the community support for our plans as well.
I think the real breakthrough in this plan, as modest as it may seem, is that it's an integrated solution.
Yep.
And that's really the power of this plan.
Yep.
Is that it doesn't rely on a single, and I've been involved in many cities around transportation plans, and oftentimes they silo themselves into one kind of system. And I think the power of this is that it makes all transportation modes better tomorrow than they are today.
And that is fantastic justification for me, but make sure that the people who don't pay attention to the same level to our, we have something out there at least understanding the basic questions.
All right. Well, Mr. Russell.
I've been looking through all these slides to try to find something about, other than page 10, they talk about the current visitors going from current 3 million to 4 million. Are we addressing, I mean, where's the shifts in visitor parking and visitor trips to the downtown? Is that just going to let it continue to grow, or is that part of this? Or
it's part of the 16,500, about 8,000 of that is non-employee parking.
Well, it says daily commuter, so I was thinking that wasn't. I thought that was just workers. So that's part of the daily visitors that come into town.
Yes.
And we expect a mode shift with them too, then?
No, not necessarily. We hope that there will be some. Again, working with the hotels in the community, that we can reduce the number of shuttles by them using the system instead. But about half of that parking is for non-employee parking in the downtown DNC district.
Yeah, it looks like those numbers will continue to grow.
I was just a visitor in Washington, D.C., and I had the option of getting a parking spot in downtown D.C. for about $60 a night, or I could park at the Reston station for $4.95 a night, and I found that was sufficient motivation for me to park out at the Transit Center. And not everyone's going to make that same decision, but hopefully a portion will.
All right, anything else? Moving on.
So these last couple slides are just reiterating the key findings. We've already talked, there's a need. The integrated solution we believe is the best. We're hearing the same from the council. We need to look at infrastructure, and our policies, our programs, our incentives. This will all be phased. And again, to reiterate, what we're talking about right now is full build-up. When we look at the cost, when we look at the amount of infrastructure, these will all be determined as we move forward. And at the end of the day, to pay for this, it's going to require significant partnership, shall we say, with others to help us. And as Richard said, even, being open here as a council, as a DMCC board, to public-private partnerships, what does that mean? What does it look like? That's still to be determined. But that'll be an area that we're going to spend a significant amount of time trying to really understand all those different pieces to make sure that we have the necessary funding. Maybe, Lisa, you want to touch base on just the next steps?
Sure. So as we move forward, and Michael, you asked a little bit about this, we're going to be addressing all types of users and modes. We'll be accommodated, so we'll talk about that. We're going to launch the TMA in Rochester, we hope. Of course, increase bike and ped network without reducing traffic lanes or some kind of language that we adjust on that. The transit at grade rubber-tired bus BRT, which is important, and I've heard loud and clear that we need to make sure people understand what that really is and what it can be. Phasing. And then engage with potential funders. And these are the kinds of things that our team has taught us and that we need to start now so that we can, it's gonna take a little longer now to get all of this in place so that we can move a little quicker later.
So as you mentioned, today was really a chance to gather any comments, thoughts you have, provide some really good insight already. If there's additional information, we'd like to hear it so we can incorporate that into what we're shooting for is a June meeting with the council, DMCC board that month, as well as the council to hopefully address the different items that you may have. And you do have several people from our team here, so if there's anything that we missed, was it lost over too quick? If there's anything, please add it. If there's anything council would like to follow up on either now or after, we'd like to take that.
All right, Ms. Johnson?
That's where. Yeah. Is the city council DMCC board meeting a combined meeting? Oh, okay, it's two sets. Just check.
Just in June. We're going to be targeting both.
Okay, I just had a little, need to schedule that. moment.
One thing I want to I realize that DMC is a small area and Rochester is a small area, but I believe the fact is we talk about transit and we talk about other issues like affordable housing, the ability to expand this and partner public by involving other small cities around the city of Rochester, possibly also be in this transit operation of a rapid transit may be a benefit to them as well. I hope you're staying open to different options that would allow us to expand this beyond. I mean, initially we need to take care of the Rochester, the DMC area, but I do believe this would be something that might be able to assist us down the road, expanding it to others. And, you know, there are things, and I've talked to other people on the phone about, small cities have grant opportunities that we don't have based on the population of the city, and that some of that could go back to help them figure out their transit issues as well, which in turn would help us with other issues. So just asking that you keep the thought process open to expand this beyond the edges.
And that's, I think it's a good idea anyway, but that might also help mitigate or make it more amenable to some of the state and federal funding sources if they see that we're bringing a regional solution to the table and not just serving our own backyard.
And that's kind of what I meant by that target slide, where it was just like all of these groups have to be talking to one another.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Wojcik?
You know, we are the principal employment center for probably more than 100 communities around here now, and all of these communities really have tremendous opportunity to create their own destination park and ride sites, and I expect to see there'll be one or two bold communities around Rochester that'll really think about an integrated approach of getting people door-to-door from their community to downtown Rochester, and as they have success with that, that model will certainly continue to grow. ROCOG has a portion of this, but I think where I've been a little bit disappointed, I think we need people stepping up, is at MnDOT. MnDOT has a regional and statewide planning obligation, and we frankly aren't getting a whole lot from them on these issues right now. My understanding is they're not even filling some of these planning-type positions right now. So I do think that we need to, you know, put the message out to MnDOT that we do expect them to be part of this region-wide transportation plan, and really expect them to step up to the plate, because MnDOT does a lot of regional planning assistance up in the Twin Cities area, and District 6 of MnDOT should be doing the same thing for us down here, and having done this for 10 years, I'm just not seeing it.
Well, we have had some discussions with MnDOT and have captured their interest, and we have more to come on that. So
I look forward to their progression.
Yeah, me too.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, maybe for our transit geniuses, is there a role for the city to play in incentivizing some of that activity at these other communities? Because I know I've seen other communities start to realign their expectations and realign their incentives with bringing in services like daycare, bringing in services like parking lots where they need them, stuff like that. What role do we play in that equation? Is there other models we can follow? Who's lead? What leads do we have in that regard?
Actually, I think that the TMA, even though it's being proposed to help provide the trip sharing and trip management for the DMC district, actually can benefit all these other communities, because it will be available to any person who might live anywhere in Southeast Minnesota. Basically determine what where a ride share might occur. And I think as people become more accustomed to the software and the ability to use it, I would think that it's going to become actually quite intuitive that small cities are going to look at the opportunity to develop these mobility hubs within their city instead of their residents and citizens getting in cars, driving all the way to Rochester to park in a mobility hub in Rochester.
Right.
And so I think that the economic development opportunities that go with a mobility hub, the smaller communities will start sensing that. There's already park and rides that occur there today for the regional buses. I don't think it's going to take very long for them to see the ride sharing growing and the opportunity for economic development in their own communities.
Well, I would volunteer if we need someone to do it, but I think sending some sort of ambassador to these communities to say, listen, we have this new software available. This is a key component of what we're trying to do. It's something you can leverage. Let's work together. I think that's something council members and transit planners and staff can all do together, but let's go out there and let's sell this thing if we're going to do it, because I got to be honest, I think that there might be a certain level of skepticism about how many more people are out there to convert to carpooling. So, I really want those performance metrics, and I'm not saying I'm putting performance metrics just for staff to accomplish, like, let's go out there and figure out ways to make it successful. But that was the thing that crossed my mind as we look at the software, you know, how do you leverage it on a broader scope? So, I think that's a clear example of maybe a step we can take.
Just to that point, I think we've got a couple of great forums and opportunities. We already belong to the League of Municipalities, so that's a group of 60 regional cities. We can, proactively share a lot of this. I know, Lisa, you've shared at that group previously. We need to be doing that more frequently. And then we have the Journey to Growth subcommittee that focuses on transportation, another great forum that also has a regional element to it. So we should leverage those groups and that already exist, and especially if we're already a member. Ms. Wojcik.
And the private profits that are available to doing a mid-rise mixed-use projects in other communities tied into the park and ride will help a lot. But as a local community, the best thing that I think that we can do is let's stop subsidizing parking. Let's let the parking go to market rate, and that's both us and Mayo. And that'll have an incredibly powerful effect in both reducing the demand for additional parking needed in downtown Rochester, and people deciding that, well, you know, I think I'm going to find a different way.
All right, any other final comments as we wrap up this topic for today?
Thank you.
It's helpful. Very good.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank
you.
All right, we'll move on to our second topic, which is an update on Discovery Walk. who is stepping us through that?
We got to do for that, apparently.
So far, so good.
Can make a proposal to have meetings outside soon.
Just like spring in the classroom, right?
Yes.
Let's take this out.
Let's open the windows. There's just the birds.
All right, ready to go?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I'll kick this off. Council President Saber. This presentation, again, is not for any action, but rather a progress report that we'd like to provide on the work we've been doing on the schematic design process for Discovery Walk. And as to provide some context and as a reminder, the Discovery Square subdistrict is, again, one of the priorities of Destination Medical Center. And it includes a 16-block district that is both a live, work, and play district. There are many new projects that have already been either underway or completed or just launched in that district, including the redevelopment of the Connolly Mass Building, the 501 First Building, People's Food Co-op, the Opus Titan project, which will be advancing residents at Discovery Square, and of course the new Mark Mortensen Building, Discovery Square Phase 1 building, which will be home to partially Mayo Clinic, but also many other new life science companies that will occupy that building. in addition, we are working on the public realm and the public space of that district. So in the concept design documents for DMC, there was this notion of a Discovery Square public space. But in addition to that, there is this idea of connecting the Discovery Square district through Discovery Walk, a way of rethinking what Second Avenue would look like, Second Avenue Southwest. So we retained the team that led our Heart of the City work, the RSP and Cone partners, to lead us through the schematic design phase for Discovery Walk, which really builds on the concept work that took place about 2 years ago. So with that, we've asked Shane Cohen, who you've met before and you've seen his work with Heart of the City, to present the current work on Discovery Walk, get your feedback and reaction. Again, we're not asking for any action per se today, but are interested in your feedback and reaction to the direction this is headed. So with that, Shane.
Great, thank you. It's great to see everyone. We are really just coming to the end of schematic design, so this has been a conceptual exploration. We had a community advisory team, which include leadership from the city, from public works, from planning, from park and rec, as well as leadership from Mayo and DMC as well. So it's been a collaborative process. We've had four meetings, and each step we made a series of decisions that would take us to the next step and continue to develop the plan. So it's been quite a empowering process. As identified in the master plan, the whole idea here is to create a walk that is about bringing people together and discovering along the way. And that's also interfaced a lot with the presentation that you just saw, the transportation presentation, both with City Loop and understanding the goals of transportation in the city and how it would impact the design of this new conversion of the street into a much more public-oriented street that would touch Discovery Square. We've done a lot of public interface as well. We did it different this time. We got to know your city's idea on how we would interact with the public in part of the city. And we thought we could improve upon that by doing more pop-up interaction. So in addition to two community meetings and presentations that were well attended and great feedback, we also had pop-up events at the co-op and at different buildings, getting people that worked at Mayo on their lunch shift and around the city. And really, all of that, we came away with a really enthusiastic support from the community about turning this street into a great dynamic pedestrian realm that was about food and art and innovation and gathering and connecting with each other. So we then cataloged all the feedback that we got and prioritized seven goals with the committee. The first one was that Second Avenue should feel more like a park than a street. It should be flexible for access and for events. It should promote health and wellness and innovation. It should connect Soldiers Field to Heart of the City and Heart of the City to Soldiers Field. Provide a unique program and experience for everyone in the city to be accessible and safe for everyone, and finally to support future development, which there was a lot of discussion about how could we best support future development along this street and provide this incredible opportunity for the people of Rochester. The vision at a glance is super compelling and easy to get on board with conceptually, although there's a lot of details here. You take one of the more underutilized streets in Rochester, a street that doesn't feel very friendly right now when you walk down it, all the buses are lined up and parked there. A street that's not used that much, and yet it's going right by what we've now identified as the new innovation district of Discovery Square. So the good news here is this is a really wide right-of-way. It's a 77-foot wide right-of-way on the street, so we had a lot of opportunity to look at the street and conceptualize on how we could create a great new parkway, still keep traffic open on the street, and yet have it be flexible. And so the goal was to create a street that when you walked down it, you discovered nature. And when you walked down it, you discovered community and you connected with each other and the people that are walking next to you. That you discovered innovation, both through the way that it was used and the way that it was And finally, that there's an element of play that brings families and children and people together, artists together, to play on the street. The first decision we made as a group was to maintain a traveling, maintain traffic on the street. We believed that was the thing to do to promote development, and that was a consensus decision, although we wanted to maximize green space. So we said, let's make this a curbless street, a street that feels like a plaza, it could get shut down, it could be a festival street, but yet you can drive on the street with one-way, two-way traffic. And then we'd shift that over to the east, so we'd maximize green space on the west. So the part that would be the most like a park would touch Discovery Square. And at the heart of it all, in a city that promotes wellness and health and well-being in our bodies and our mind, we believe the streets should be the same. It should promote wellness within how it feels and how it's designed. So through a new urban forest and a canopy, we'll create great microclimate for sun and shade and clean air, and use native plants that will use very little water, and then collect all the storm water and reuse it, and also showcase it on the street as well. So this is it at a glance. It's hard to really understand it, so we'll talk about it in sections. We went through a series of discussions with Richard and his team about this travel lane. Should it be only pedestrian? Should it be one-way? Should it be two-way? And what we really decided upon was a flexible street. Make it wide enough for two-way traffic so that two-way traffic can happen there. If later down the line through the use, we all decided we wanted it to be a one-way street, it could be adapted to that. If there was festivals and events, it could be shut down and be pedestrian only or change over time. And so this 21-foot wide travel lane allowed a 14-foot wide sidewalk on the east, a 21-foot travel lane, and then 40 some feet for this new urban walkway. Green walkway. We looked at it through all the seasons. We looked at it through the spring. And so this first image is looking at it from 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue going down on what it would feel like when the leaves, what we're all going to see here soon, when the leaves start to come out and we all feel alive and excited for the spring. So this shows the importance of these development parcels on the east and the ability. The whole idea is that this will welcome and will pull people towards Soldiers Field and also in the other direction. So you're just looking at gardens and a stormwater system, a dense canopy of trees, and new ideas for how artists would interact with the street that we'll talk about in a little bit. In the summer, it's even more about play and getting people to come out and play. So we have a stormwater system that runs when it rains, and also there's a water feature that was designed right outside of Discovery Square as an idea of kind of this main gathering place in the summertime that could get converted to ice in the wintertime. So here, this area is also about working, outdoor work environments. There would be lots of technology for plug and play. We could really explore more table-like settings in this area where you could work outdoors and also interact with families on the street with this large gardens. The gardens are the separators between the pedestrian realm and the areas that you can drive. So that it's quite safe to drive down the street and also walk down the street because of this giant garden that separates the two. And in the fall, we start to break out new ideas that are being used around the country for warmth, seating, heating stones, heating rocks to gather on. You see the colors start to change. There's a series of pergolas that provide light shade. And in this image, you see how the street has actually been closed down in a festival or a fair has set up and lined on the street, and then how it doubles in size in that particular order. And then finally, we had a lot of discussion about winter, how you could shut down sections of the street in the winter. You could have great events. This teeter-totter event is one that is traveled all around the country this winter. There's all these new programs that have really been inspired by Montreal and other cold climate countries, where they're bringing these great winter festivals to cities and getting people to get out and celebrate the winter much more than we're even used to, and embracing being north, as we hear everyone in Minnesota talking about these days. And so this is an image that shows how the pergolas can double up as swings and play equipment. Right now in the cost estimate, we're not showing heating the pedestrian realm in the street. We could add that if we wanted to in time. We have these art frames that are latent design, design these frames that local artists would install, and the art would change along the whole street, inspired by our local art community, which I have to say I continue to be really impressed in Rochester from the local art community. The other thing that's super important to the street is to give, we all believed, is to give the pedestrians the right-of-way. So make the street feel much more about walking than it is about driving, but yet still drive. And the way that we would do that is when on the cross streets of 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, we would actually create, you would rise up very gently so that the entire 2nd Avenue would be at a plaza elevation, the same as the sidewalk. So there's no differentiation in grade from the sidewalk to the street. And so you'd go up gently. This is not a speed bump. There's actually traffic intersections and either stop signs or lights that are being discussed here. It would function the exact same. It's another traffic calming measure within the city in each intersection. And then we had the pleasure of working with this incredible group from Chicago that comes up with these ideas on things that we could do early on the street, and something that Patrick has been really driving throughout the whole city and the DMC, which is these temporary pop-up ideas to get people excited about converting the street into more pedestrian strategies. Now that can be as simple as striping the sidewalk. It's something we've been talking about with the traffic consultants as Kimley Horn, as we're talking about 4th Street. Different sorts of murals that can happen on the walls, and artist-integrated projects along the whole street. Part of our responsibility was to look and see what this would cost to install, and we have broken it out on a basis and gone down, and you can see here that each tabletop has a price, and each block has a price in the around $2 million range as you're going down the street. The one adjacent to Discovery Square is more expensive as it included the water features and more outdoor work areas than the rest of the street. So it's somewhere between $12 and $14 million for the entire block. I have to say, as an urban designer and a planner, this is one of the most exciting pedestrian run proposals I've seen in a long time for a town of this size. It's the idea of creating a park that would bring people together. I think it would have a tremendous impact on the community, and a tremendous impact of celebrating one of your largest assets that took me a long time to realize that was even here, which was Soldiers Field, and bringing that to the heart of the city. So I think the impact of this is really tremendous, and it's been a pleasure to work on it to this part with the whole team. So that's where it's at right now, and welcome any questions and feedback.
Ms. Johnson.
What is the current traffic count on that street?
Kimley Horn to answer that. Or maybe some of the traffic people.
To follow on.
Okay.
Considerable volume. I don't know the number.
We could do that, yeah.
Okay.
We did look at it, of course, with the transportation planning and studied should it be combined with City Loop, should it not, where are the buses going, et cetera.
And converting the street would ultimately lower that count? Do you think? I mean, is that what you predict? I should ask that. Or do you think it would keep it?
I wouldn't predict that.
Okay.
I would predict that you'll get more slow traffic on the street. I think people want to drive down the street, which has been proven anytime there's a great public realm improvement in a city, but it's not a means to get from here to there. If people want to get from here to there, they're going to pick another street. If they want to, kind of show their neighbors or their friends this great new urban space that you have and they don't want to walk, then they'll drive down the street real slow.
Okay.
And that's the kind of traffic that you'll see a shift in the street is used. And, of course, everyone will use it to access the new development. With this sort of an infrastructure investment, you'll have, I believe, really interesting and exciting development opportunities along the street. We have met, I should have mentioned, with every property owner along the street and got their input.
Okay. Okay. I never talk, and now I'm like, no, I'm just kidding. Have we looked at what it would cost to maintain that with the water features, with the if we look at heating the sidewalk, if we look at the lighting and things like that?
The actual kind of performance metrics of maintaining this is something we would really dive into in the next stage.
Okay.
This was a much more abbreviated study than part of the city, where we actually had the full economic team on our team that was analyzing how, because today you have to ask yourself how you're going to maintain more than you're going to pay for a street. And so we have them on the team, working in Rochester and aware of it. And I think as we go forward, we want to create a very strong making this. However, the model for the way it's planted and the way it's paved is a lot of thought has gone into that as far as how we would make it as low impact as possible from a sustainable.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Wojcik.
So you touched on a little. Well, I'll start out with the incredibly positive part. This is beautiful. I love the concept. It's something that certainly makes the city and the district more attractive, and this, quite frankly, is not the most attractive part of our city today. And I know that there was a lot of fear about DMC and the University of Minnesota Rochester reducing green space in Rochester, and I've stood by and said I will not sacrifice a square inch of green space. And what this actually does is it takes Soldiers Field Park and it pulls Soldiers Field Park all the way up to Mayo Clinic. And that's a really cool concept that we're effectively adding four blocks of linear park to this. And that is a tremendous win for the community. And it would be a no-brainer if the cost of doing it was zero. But the cost of doing it is substantial, and that's on par with urban parks. But you mentioned briefly the development potential, and, you know, what realistically do we think the square footage around this potential investment in infrastructure, how many square feet of Class A space can we really expect to see if we make this $14 million investment? I mean, is it
pretty substantial, actually? So this map here shows the vacant footprints on the property right on the project right now. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, down in second, this is Mayo-owned property, and so it was Discovery Square. Mm-hmm. This substantial block here, which certainly this development really encourages, both sides of the block here between 4th and 5th. And then this whole, I think as a city, you can really, with this sort of investment, also really have some leverage with the type of development that goes in here. But the exact quantities of square foot within the current zoning regulations, we haven't ran that calculation. That'd be a good...
It's an important number.
I can help answer that question. I think that's a really important question. I can help. So we intentionally use this image, Councilmember Wojcik, that had the vacant blocks as a way of beginning to imagine. So this is the 501 first, so you can see kind of a scale of a development. You could imagine here probably three times as much as the 501 on first. These are properties where the owner wants to redevelop and has ideas for redeveloping and is inspired by this as a potentially catalyst for her project. This is a 90,000 square foot building, so you can imagine this being another probably 180,000. Yeah. So we're looking at probably more than a half a million square feet of redevelopment that could occur along this corridor.
That's good to hear. Part of the sensitivity to this is going to be that, we're talking about a $15 million investment in park infrastructure at a time where a lot of people are really struggling with affordable housing here in Rochester. So how we communicate this, and more importantly, how we pay for it, is going to be a key driver. And if the principal revenues funding a piece of infrastructure like this is from the benefiting properties, that's going to be a lot easier to justify than just a flat-out contribution of public resources to something like this. And so I do think that those details have to be hashed out. And the model that I'm probably the most excited about, I point up to what the Twin Cities have done now, is on some of their key pieces of urban infrastructure, they've effectively put a per square foot charge on adjacent properties, and as the properties grow, obviously that charge goes down for everybody then. But looking at some innovative financing models is important to making a beautiful vision become reality.
Yep. A couple of comments. One, and I think Ms. Johnson kind of touched on this, I just want to make sure we're considering some of the practical aspects. Snow removal, for example. This isn't going to be a typical street where you can just pile it up in the side or the median and then remove it later. So we'll have to have a different strategy for that. Second comment I have is I'm going to want to see a lot more scrutiny on these numbers. Unless Public Works is telling me they're really going to do substantial utility work when they open these streets up,
$12 to $15 million seems like a lot of money for four blocks, and it, largely we're doing a lot of street treatment, landscaping, and some artistic treatment and so forth. I'm not quite comfortable with the numbers I'm seeing. I would want to see a lot more scrutiny on the numbers as we get into the detail. Mr. Ruska.
In addition to that, I think you've got on page 40, I think it is here, you've got the fountains that are, you know, splash pads and that, nice to see, but, you know, if you're going to have cars driving on that winter, you know, the maintenance, the upkeep, the cost to make sure that things are working properly and maintained properly is an additional to that $12 to $15 million. So those are some of the things that we'd have to see a little bit more.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that those are on the pedestrian side, not the traffic side. So the traffic lane is, you know, just for traffic. You could shut it down because of the way that it would be implemented, so it would feel like a plaza. It's a good one. And also, you know, in the schematic design of this, the elements like the water feature, they're ideas, right, for us all to talk about and vet and go forward or not go forward with. The strength of the idea is in a green ribbon. For this, we did look at the square foot dollars of it to a piece of infrastructure like Nick Mall for a similar length, and this has a significant value above and beyond that on a per block basis. So telling the details, right? You know, what do we pave it with in time?
And I just want to be clear. I'm not opposed to the concept, some of what we're seeing here. I just want to see more scrutiny on the costs as we go forward. Patrick?
Yes, I just want to point out, maybe one more back. I want to point out the relationship between the conversation you just had with respect to transportation and this conversation, and that by advancing the transportation plan you're talking about, which is intended to avoid using all of our downtown surface parking for our parking land for parking ramps, that conversation leads to the possibility of the redevelopment of these sites, which would otherwise likely end up being surface parking or parking structures themselves. So there is a relationship between these conversations that perhaps isn't as obvious. The other thing I want to say about the price, I thought you would think it was a bargain given the $47 million price tag that Heart of the City came in at.
Nope.
Maybe I'll just remind you.
Don't make that
assumption. Remind you of a potential when I bring Shane into a project.
not me.
But the real power of this kind of work is not that one can expect to take on this all at one time. It's really recognizing that by doing this work, it will incrementally influence other decisions going on. And so, Council President Staver, you mentioned the utility or the utility work. And while Second Avenue doesn't necessarily have utility work that is necessary at this time, Fourth Street does. And there is going to be an investment in the utility, the sewer at Fourth Street and the street itself, which allows for this discussion on Second Avenue to help influence and shape the design work that is in fact going to happen in the next calendar year. So while the entire Discovery Walk concept isn't ready to be acted on, it can help shape a decision by this private developer and by this public street that has to be done at this time. So that's why we say today isn't about an action, and it's not about accepting a $14 million solution. It's about recognizing the potential of this direction and the impact it could have on existing private development, existing public development, and some future private development that we think will be inspired by this. So,
okay, yeah. And I appreciate that. You were looking for feedback today.
Absolutely.
I'll share my
feedback. Of course.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, so I think we have some planning staff here, and I have a piece of feedback for everyone regarding the presentation of projects like this. We need to develop a worksheet that we're going to use for both non-DMC and DMC projects that talks about the conversion of buildable spaces as we build these public platforms that are supposed to then increase land value, increase tax capacity, lead to that investment. I'd really like to see a worksheet model that you can lay down so that I'm not sitting here going, well, how many square foot did you say, a half million, at what mm-hmm. price per? We really need to get much more specific about the impact for these dollars, because it's real dollars up front, and if it's fake dollars on the end, then there's this whole ether that we can fall into. The second piece is that street is massive, and I think calling it underutilized is really being generous to its current use. So what I know, I've walked a number of times along the, had the map up here, along the power facility there and down the next block, but it seems like, and I'm bracing for impact, this is a good opportunity to prototype something before we roll out the full design. It's just lanes sitting there. Mm-hmm. I think there's buses and food trucks that park there now.
Right.
Something we can realign fairly easy. So maybe this is something we prototype, we talk to the RDA. They're definitely on board already.
Yeah, Jenna's, I should have mentioned Jenna. She's been on our meetings.
So if we can prototype what it's like, get some green space out there, get some local arborists and vendors down there to simulate what this green space is like, mm-hmm. that's how we build this community connection to an actual idea. Yeah. These pictures are great. I love them. But I have this tendency to just sniff out and immediately kind of get concerned about stock photography. It's something about that catches my eye. So if what I'd like to see is maybe as a part of the next phase, which I know is getting much more into the nitty gritty, would be, is there a meaningful prototype we can do for this? Is there a way we roll that out that we can all get excited about? Maybe it isn't four blocks, maybe it's two blocks, or maybe it's a moving block. I have three items, but I had them written down. The last one is, you broke my heart when I didn't get all the way to the park.
Of crossing six.
Yeah. You got to get me to the park.
Yeah.
Because that really, when I got two little boys, and I love the idea of some easy way to move my family from the park downtown to enjoy parts of downtown.
Sure.
But if we can't, that last mile, you might as well not build it. You got to get me that last block to the park. It's got to be the same experience, because I don't want visitors getting lost.
Right.
I don't want patients getting lost, and I don't want families worrying about crosses in these intersections. So, figure that out. Otherwise, I love the idea.
We talked about that very issue, and I gave you the same concern about not stopping at 6th Street. The nice thing about this whole design and the compatibility and cooperation between these different endeavors is that City Loop Plaza is going right by the park and ties back in the same location. So again, we're getting you there, it's just a different fashion.
Well, you gotta present it, because it looks like on here like there's this last block problem. So
sure.
If you present it like a last box problem, then I start thinking, what do we got to do?
That's a great message. Good looking thing.
You go to the church.
On my way.
Nick, we have had really exciting conversations about prototyping ideas with Latent, and they've come and given presentations about it. There's a lot of opportunity for them along this because of the vacant parcels that are there right now,
mm-hmm.
As well as the intersections.
So what I heard there was like a two-week ongoing block party along the stretch to see if people like it.
Yeah.
2 week. No, we're just kidding.
You're
I was hoping.
I was 12. No, I'm just kidding.
I was hoping for a week, so I shared with you.
All right. Does that
thank you.
That's great.
Any
other comments?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Is there any other business for this afternoon before we head into our evening meeting?
Just real quickly, knowing we have an hour till our meeting starts, just a public reminder, we start at 6 p.m. tonight. And then for next week's COW meeting agenda, we plan to make some further revisions, as we have with the comp plan. And the team has informed me that we're ready to discuss sections 1 and 3, I believe, next week at the meeting. So we'll get those out as soon as we can. If we have some, but to make sure there's a lot of reading there. Also have an MCC update for myself. We'll be making some recommendations to you about this. Okay. Makes sense.
Anything else?
All right.
See everyone in about an
hour. Yeah. So, are you going to recommend one new arena or two? Are you going to recommend one?
I kind of caught me off guard.
It would have been a nice heads up to know that.
Did you borrow one from Ben?